Can the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members?
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The Sergeant-at-Arms will bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is the Reverend Kevin McDonough from St. Peter Claver Church in St. Paul. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Madam President and Senators, the President of the Senate and most of the members are too young to remember the night of May 6, 1965, but I remember in Stillwater a heavy downpour of rain. Others in Fridley and elsewhere experienced much more tragic consequences from terrible storms. As we all rejoice passing from winter into spring and summer, we know it's the season for tough weather too. So let's take a moment, pray for safety for all the people of this wonderful state, that there will be no destructive tornadoes, that the crops in the field will stand in spite of the threat of hail, and that we will get through the season safe, refreshed, and renewed. Let's pray. Lord of the seasons, protect us now as we move into a new time. Thank you for taking winter back to where it belongs. Bless us now with a safe and healthy springtime, a growing season that is productive, and an abundant harvest for all. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Flag of the United States of America and to the Republic.
The Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Buck, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Daines, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fischbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Lori, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J, Peterson B, Pratt, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, Rood, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Uyghur, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move first to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the messages.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file herewith returned. Senate file number 748, a bill for an act relating to commerce, regulating pre-need funeral insurance, signed Alvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. This one. And Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House files number 161, 215, 461, 1451, and 826, signed Alvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. And Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted. House file number 542. Signed, Alvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
We move now to the fourth order of business, first reading of House bills. The bills will be referred as indicated on the agenda, and as indicated by the Secretary, they'll be given their first reading.
Title of...
House File Number 542, a bill for an act relating to state government, establishing expectations for classified employees as nonpartisan resources to all decision makers, providing additional whistleblower protection to state employees.
House File 542 will be referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration for comparison with Senate File 443, now on general orders. We move now to the fourth order of business, first reading of the fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevail. Sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. Senate File 661 will be given its second reading. Seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. The bills printed on the agenda will be given their second reading. Eighth order of business, introduction, first reading of Senate bills. The bills on the introduction calendar will be referred as indicated and given their first reading. Ninth order of business, we have an author's motion. All those in favor of the author's motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Ortman.
Madam President, may I have make a point of personal privilege?
State your point.
Madam President and members, I just wanted to advise you that our colleague, Senator Carrie Rood's mother, passed away this afternoon. She was a great woman. She was about 95 years old. I met her. Imagine Senator Rood's mother being feisty, but she was quite feisty. Her favorite color was pink, and she was a World War II veteran. She was a donut dolly. She actually served on the shores in France after the invasion. She was a great woman, a great Minnesotan. I'm sorry to advise you of the news of her passing. I hope that you will include Senator Rood and her mother and her family in your prayers and thoughts as you go through the remainder of the day.
Thank you, Senator Ortman. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I'd like to move a recess of the Senate until approximately 4 p.m.
All those in favor of the motion to recess, say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam President, the Majority Caucus will caucus in room 107 immediately.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you. The Republicans will caucus in room 112.
Senate stands in recess.
Madam President, I impose a call of the Senate. Further proceedings on the roll call be dispensed with, and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. All opposed say no. Motion prevails. The Sergeant at Arms will bring in the absent members. Senator Bach.
Madam President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
There is. The Secretary will read the privilege report.
Senator Bach from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be, and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on House File Number 459, Senators Sieben, Eaton, and Rood. Senator Bach moved that the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. All opposed say no. Motion prevails. Senator Bach. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we'll go to the fifth order of business. Reports of committees.
Madam President, I move the committee reports printed in the addendum be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. They're printed in the and the addendum. All those in favor say second reading. On to seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. Those are also printed in the addendum. Second reading. Senator, remaining under orders and resolutions. Senator Bach.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. And members, the list is on your desk.
Thank you, Senator Bach. The first bill under consideration is number 11, House File 760, Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Madam President. Before I introduce the bill, I do have an amendment to offer. It is the A50 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A60 amendment.
A50, yes. Thank you.
Senator Wicklund moves to amend House File Number 760 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 24, 2013, as follows, page 28, line 6, and this is the A50 amendment.
On that amendment, Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Madam President. On that amendment, it simply contains three cases where the language didn't get fully updated in the bill. This is a bill that is about language updates, and there were simply three cases where that didn't happen and it should have happened. So I'd like to take care of that before I present the bill so that it all reflects the updated language.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the A50 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Motion is adopted. Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 760 is a Human Services Outdated Statutory Terms Update. The purpose of this bill is to replace inappropriate and insensitive terminology that's currently in Minnesota statutes and rules. The terminology relates to individuals with disabilities, and it replaces such terms with more sensitive and contemporary language. The bill resulted from an audit that was performed because of the stipulated class action settlement agreement, commonly called the Jensen Settlement Agreement. And in that agreement, it required the Department of Human Services to introduce a bill to replace inappropriate terms that appear in Minnesota statutes and rules. Within Minnesota law of 2012, there was instruction provided that stated that the Commissioner of Human Services was to collaborate with individuals with disabilities, families, advocates, and other governmental agencies to solicit feedback, to identify inappropriate and insensitive language relating to individuals with disabilities, to conduct a comprehensive audit, and then to make recommendations to be presented to the 2013 legislature. So that is what you find contained within this bill. The bill replaces terms that are under jurisdiction of the Department of Human Services, and there also replaces some terminology that is contained in language that has to do with other agencies as well. The working group that developed the recommendations, they worked with agencies outside the jurisdiction of Department of Human Services to make recommendations. They worked with those agencies, and then they came to agreement on the appropriate terminology. So each agency or board that was affected either concurred with the recommendation or suggested an acceptable alternative. Each of the terminology changes is required to be made within existing appropriations, so there's no cost to this bill. I hope that you can provide support. This will bring our language and our statutes up to date and provide more sensitive language. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion of this bill? Seeing none, the Secretary will give the Senate File 760 its third reading.
House File Number 760, a bill for an act relating to human services, updating outdated terminology.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted the desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
The next bill on special orders is number 76 on general orders, House File 791, Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 791 is a bill dealing with the regulation of annuity sales in Minnesota. Senators, those of you who have served in the past will remember that we have seen a version of this bill before. I think you were given as a handout from another member the letter from Governor Dayton last year that accompanied a veto of the bill. The letter outlines, first of all, I'll back up. Currently in Minnesota statute, the entire extent of the statute that deals with the regulation of these products to any member, and most of us, and I think we'll have some discussion today about especially the sale to senior members of our population, is all of two paragraphs. And members, if you're on your computers and want to look it up, it's Chapter 72A, TAC 20, Subdivision 34, two paragraphs. And over the course of time, especially in the 1980s, this led to some customers being harmed in the sale of these, action by the state of Minnesota via the Attorney General's office that resulted in multi-million dollar settlements and some compacts that the last of which expires in September. So there's a little bit of a timeliness to us, if we desire to taking some action this year. Once that last compact expires in September, we're back to just the two paragraphs of law that's currently in state statute. Another factor at play, members, is the Dodd-Frank Act, which also says if by June 2013 we don't take action, we will fall under the provisions of the Dodd-Frank Act. Now, some may ask, what's wrong with that? Frankly, what those that are advocating this action would say is that it's a little bit broader than we would want here in Minnesota. We want to do something a little bit more specific. And part of the reason for that is, as most of us know, we have several major companies, major employers in the state of Minnesota that work in this area. So kind of with that background information, what does House File 791 do? And I should say, members, I had the Senate file. The House took this up last week, passed it by a vote of 128 to 10 or something along those lines. Actually, that's 138, so it'd be too many. But somewhere in that neighborhood, a solid yes vote. They made one minor change, which I'm fine with, so that's why we're taking up the House file instead of my Senate file. This legislation that we're looking at is based on legislation put together by NCSL. Most of us know that NCSL is a pretty credible organization. There are currently now 28 states that have adopted their own rules on this versus waiting for the Dodd-Frank Act to come into play. It covers consumers, especially seniors, and helps regulate the sale of annuity products and make sure that they're appropriate for their financial needs. And I'll talk a little bit about where in the bill we see that. Current law requires that annuity sales be suitable but provides no guidance as to what suitability means. And it doesn't provide guidance to two different groups that sell these products. One are insurance agents that work directly for the companies that create these products. The other are broker-dealers, and we're going to, I think, talk probably a little bit about broker-dealers here on the floor. And I think it's important to remember that broker-dealers are independent, small business people that sell a number of products. They don't work just for one company. And we're going to talk about why they have responsibility for their own actions. So what we try to do is remedy some of the vagaries around this two-paragraph current law by providing some clear upfront standards so that seniors do not have to rely solely on enforcement from, in this case, the Attorney General's office or other legal remedies. As I mentioned, we've had strong bipartisan support. Won't refer to the vote in the other body. I know we like to pretend that they don't exist when we're over here, but I will call your attention to the fact that this bill passed in the Senate last year 59-6. This bill, I would argue, is better because it addresses substantially two of the governor's 3 points, and the third one is where there will be some discussion. One of the governor's concerns was an elevated review on the sale of annuities for seniors. The bill does that. It requires two levels of review for every sale of an annuity that deals with the senior population, and explicitly provides that the insurance company selling the product at the end of the day is responsible for the suitability of every sale, regardless of whether they directly sell it through their agent or whether it's sold through a broker agent. In the case of the sale being made through their agent, it also requires an elevated review on a whole series of suitability items that must be done by a person, not just automatically by a machine. And again, I just want to call your attention, if we don't take action on this, we'll fall under the provisions of Dodd-Frank. Some may argue that that's a good thing. I would argue that we want to have our own rules here in Minnesota. And also, if we don't take action, come September, when the last compact expires, the last decree, I'm sorry, expires, we'll be back to this lengthy two-paragraph law that is sort of our basis now. And with that, members, I know that there will be an amendment that's going to be offered. We can debate that amendment, but I'm also happy to stand for questions. And, Madam President, I think since, as far as I know, the amendment addresses what I think remains the largest area of contention, maybe now would be the appropriate time to take that up.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to offer the A1 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Eaton moves to amend House File Number 791 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 25, 2013 as follows. Page 7, delete subdivision 8. And this is the A1 amendment.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A1 amendment essentially keeps what we're currently doing in place. For Minnesota has required insurance companies to review the suitability of the insurance products, the fixed annuities, sold by either agents or brokers for decades. This amendment would continue to capture this aspect of current law, whereas the bill without it guts this requirement for insurance companies when the product is sold through a broker-dealer. After the settlements with the Attorney General's office back in the 80s, insurance companies stepped up and set up processes to ensure that they were meeting these requirements under current law. When they did so, complaints from seniors to the Attorney General's office dropped and the process worked. The insurance company may flag suspect policies for review using a computer system, and when a policy is flagged, it is reviewed for suitability by a staff member of their choosing. This area has been heavily litigated all the way up to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Every insurance company in Minnesota knows full well that their obligations aren't what their obligations are under the current law. But they do not want the accountability of suitability review anymore. So they're seeking to gut those requirements when their product is sold through a broker-dealer. So, members, if you support my amendment, you will continue the law as we currently have it. At this time, 21 other states do not have the FINRA exemption, and Washington and New York passed versions of the NAIC model bill without the FINRA exemption. And they seem to be fairly large states that are doing just fine with insurance. And we've done it, we've followed this for decades here in Minnesota. Senior citizens need our protection. And I'm trying to find my... I guess what I'm saying is if we want to protect senior citizens, we need to give them the protection up front. If we wait and let them sue later, many of them, as in the 80s, passed away before the suits were settled. They need the money right away. They don't have time to go through long, lengthy court processes if their annuities have been, if they've signed an annuity they shouldn't have. The senior citizens are very insecure when it comes to financial issues often, and they don't have a lot of money for attorneys. So this law, this amendment, would require upfront accountability by the insurance companies instead of after-the-fact liability, which would require suing. So please, I ask for your support. Thank you.
Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Madam President. Just a couple comments in response, and I know we've got a couple folks in the body that actually work in this. I'm a college teacher who's just interested in, I guess, tough policy conversations, so I'll invite others with real-world experience to chime in if they would like. You know, on the comments made by Senator Eaton, those 21 states haven't taken any action yet, so they're going to fall under the Dodd-Frank. Of the 28 that have passed it, 26 do include the similar language that we have, as she correctly noted, two did not, and that is a choice for this body to make. You know, in direct response, we have two different opportunities for these products to be sold. When the company employs an agent, when the insurance producer employs an agent, you have both the agent's review and decision, and I would call your attention to the bill, which lays out a long list of suitability requirements, currently not in state statute, lays out sales and education requirements, currently not in state statute, lays out determination factors, currently not in state statute, and then the insurance company in that case also has this requirement for an elevated review, and in the case of seniors, that must be done by a person. Where the crux of this issue is in this other sales opportunity, and that is independent broker agents who are not employees of insurance companies. And there's a twofold problem with that. And one is they're not employees. So you're asking a company to take direct responsibility for a decision made by an independent small business person. And the insurance producers are reluctant to do so. The other problem with that is these small business people who make their living selling these products would then be required to give their information to these companies. And they are reluctant to do so. This is their life bread. These are their clients, the people that they've built relationships with that they know well. Once they give all that information over, what does the large company need those independent dealers for? They can just go around them, go directly to the client, maximize profits, minimize expenses. That is where the crux of the issue is. And I don't take issue at all with the Attorney General's concern on this area. That is the Attorney General's role, to be the consumer advocate. And I think Senator Eaton spoke well to what those concerns are. But I think we as a body have to balance those things. I think this bill, which is now 8 pages instead of 2 paragraphs, does include a lot of protection. And I would just note that the current bill, which is 2 paragraphs long, does not say anything to these elevated reviews or additional work that is under these consent decrees, the last of which expires in September. However, I would call your attention to page 3, which includes the entire list of suitability information that must be taken into account, whether it's a broker-dealer or an insurance agent making the sale. I would call your attention to page 5, which specifically highlights the insurance producer's liability regardless of whether the insurance agent made the sale or the broker-dealer made the sale. I would also call your attention to page 6, which deals specifically with the factors that must be considered when it's a sale to a senior. So this, the idea that perhaps we're not doing the best we can on behalf of our seniors, I think, is covered in the bill. And then specifically, I would call your attention to page 7, which deals with FINRA. And members, I didn't know when I came into this what FINRA was, but it was a term that got tossed around, and people would say we and they, and I'm like, hey, wait, who is we and they? FINRA. Well, FINRA is a non-governmental organization that performs financial regulation of member brokerage firms and exchange markets, and they are ultimately regulated by the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. So, you know, it is a reputable organization that has the power to revoke licenses and prevent people from doing, I mean, it, it's a heavy hand within the field. So, you know, I feel like we've covered those aspects, and I'm happy to answer any questions on that. Would invite others if they wish to speak to it as well.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam President, and I stand in support of the Eaton Amendment. The Attorney General's office does not support this bill without the Eaton Amendment on it, and I want to leave it to the experts because their big concern is that without this amendment, seniors will be again taken for granted. And I understand Senator Reinhart's discussion and that he thinks there's enough protections, but I'm going to rely on the experts. And the governor has vetoed this bill before, and it's quite possible he will veto this bill again if it doesn't contain this amendment. So I would highly recommend that members vote for this and protect help. Continue to protect our seniors. Thank you.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. I would just say my confusion in all of this is that the Attorney General gave me a statement that says under the Dodd-Frank thing that there is no such requirement in the Harkin Amendment to Dodd-Frank. If Minnesota retains current law, Minnesota will continue to regulate fixed annuities as insurance products at the state level as it has done for decades. And not being an attorney, I have to take the Attorney General's word for that. The governor vetoed this bill last year, and some of it has been changed, but the part on the FINRA exemption has not. And he says, I would not support this legislation unless it limited the FINRA exemption, which would provide a huge loophole for insurers regarding annuities sold by securities broker to senior citizens. And the governor's veto letter correctly identifies this problem. The industry still has not addressed the concern. The Attorney General's office has provided multiple options and language to the industry, as well as the bill's authors, to close the loophole. But the industry has been unwilling to accept any of them or to provide any language back to resolve this issue. For the sake of Minnesota seniors, the bill should not become law unless this loophole is closed.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in opposition to this amendment as an insurance agent and someone that deals with the regulations that we're putting into place and working on in this body. My understanding of the law that we're currently trying to put forward provides me as an insurance agent the information that I've been asking for and needing to sell my products. And the amendment refers to several of these are in the current bill that we're looking at, except for one section. And that section deals with the supervision and what would happen as an independent agent broker. I can tell you that as a broker that lives in my community and chose to do this as a profession to offer products that will protect and benefit the people that live in my community, I need to understand why we would want to remove the ability of those people that want to take this type of responsibility on as a career, the ability to sell the annuity product as well. Because I can tell you as an agent that it becomes very difficult if I am building a relationship with a client and understand them so completely, who else is better to serve and understand the needs and suitability of that person than someone that lives with them, works with them, and offers that product to them? What this will do if we try to add this on, it will cause a lot of people to go out of the industry because of this one section of this. And I would ask people to think about that. Who would you rather purchase your annuity from or have anybody purchase that kind of product from? Somebody that they know that lives in the community or someone that works for a company that just comes in? Please think about this, and I would say please vote no on this amendment.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I rise in opposition to the amendment. I will say the bill as a whole is a good bill, but if you add this amendment to it, it takes away from the direction we're trying to go. And I just want to agree with Senator Jensen. I'm in this industry as well. What we're trying to do here is it will protect seniors. The suitability information that Senator Reinhart talked about, that we can talk about maybe a little bit later, but it clarifies that you have to ask a bunch of very important questions to people buying annuities to make sure it's the right thing. But related to, for example, variable annuities, they fall under FINRA, and they already have all of these virtually, maybe not exactly the same, but very similar requirements as far as making sure that people are asking the right questions and selling the right products to people. So it's a no on this amendment, but the overall bill is a good bill.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, members, I rise in support of the amendment. This bill, this amendment, is not aimed at the Senators Jensens and Gazelkas and Nelsons and others who are reputable and really care about their clients and know them. It's aimed more at those brokers who are more inclined to follow their financial incentive to get the sale done, to earn their 10% or so commission without the long-term regard for their clients. It's not targeted at the annuities that are sold to 60-year-olds who are more likely to live another 20 years. It's those who are sold 20-year annuities when they're 80 years old and are likely to decease before they ever see the recovery on their annuity. Members, seems to me that the brokers and dealers have a very simple solution if they wish to protect their customer base or their client relationships, and that is if they agree to sell a product from a particular insurance company, along with that to give the information to the insurance company so they can conduct that suitability review, they can have an agreement with the insurance company that client information that is given will not be used for any purpose other than that suitability review. And I would respectfully submit, members, that the insurance companies need the broker dealers in order to market their annuities and sell their annuities. And I suspect that in order to have access to that broker dealer network, they're going to be willing to agree to limit the use of the customer data they are provided to exactly and only that which is required by statute or would be required under this amendment, which is to conduct that suitability review. Now, I will also submit that it's not a huge administrative burden on the insurance companies to do so. My understanding is that the insurance companies are presently able to do most of this suitability review utilizing a computer and a statistical algorithm that reviews the parameters of any particular sale and customer, and only if that statistical analysis generates a need for further review to suggest it's outside the suitability range, then you get the in-person review. I would also submit that the insurance companies' liability for any violation of the suitability is not sufficient to hold them accountable, because they, I understand, usually have an indemnification agreement with their broker dealers. So if the broker dealer violates the law in some way or causes the insurance company to be liable, then the insurance company can simply turn back the defense and any subsequent damages to the broker-dealer and the broker-dealer's own insurance company. So the seller of the annuity, the insurance company that owns and is selling the annuity itself or is offering and selling the annuity, is not going to be on the financial hook in the end. And then the final point, members, is that this is a vulnerable population that is sold these annuities. This population is highly unlikely to avail themselves of the legal remedies of suing when they think they have been taken advantage of, if in fact they are still alive when they realize that they have been taken advantage of. So that remedy is, in my view, not sufficient to maintain adequate oversight over the system. And for that reason, I would encourage you to support the Eaton Amendment.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Eaton yield?
Senator Eaton will yield. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Eaton, can you tell me to what type of annuities does your amendment apply? Does it apply to fixed annuities or variable annuities?
Senator Eaton.
Madam President and Senator Nelson, I don't know.
Senator Nelson.
Madam President. Well, I'm not sure, then let me just ask the next question, Senator Eaton. How is the language in your amendment going to protect seniors or any vulnerable population from unscrupulous annuity sales? What is it in this amendment that is going to be helpful to seniors?
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. Senator Nelson, the language that is protective is the language where the, as Senator Latz described, would go through this computer system that would flag anybody who was like 80 years old getting a 20-year annuity, and then the insurance company would be required to review it, which is what currently happens. I don't know the definition of fixed or whatever annuities, so I'm sorry I don't know that answer.
Senator Nelson.
Madam President, members, this is a very important distinction. Members, FINRA already regulates all variable annuities. My understanding of the bill before us, House File 791, without any amendments, looks at using that same FINRA suitability for the fixed annuities. So I cannot understand what this amendment is trying to remedy. FINRA already regulates variable annuities. The bill before us regulates fixed annuities with that same FINRA regulation. So I cannot see the purpose of this amendment, and it doesn't appear that it's been described here either.
Senator Newman.
Madam President, I rise in opposition of Senator Eaton's amendment, and I will tell you that I quite candidly am surprised to hear Senator Latz speak in terms of trying to protect our vulnerable population and specifically 80-year-olds, and I believe him. Senator Goodwin has risen in support of the amendment because she feels it would support our vulnerable senior citizens, and I believe her. I think that, however, they are mistaken in their application. Senator Eaton has indicated that it would be better for seniors to have liability at the end rather than accountability at the beginning of the annuity, and I couldn't disagree with her more. In real-world terms, a number of years ago, I represented an elderly couple in this very situation that this bill would cover. My recollection is that the wife was about 80 years old, the husband was 85 years old, and he was suffering from dementia. And an unscrupulous insurance agent came in and sold them a 20-year fixed annuity. And what that amounts to is that they could not get any money out of that annuity until he was 105 years old without paying a penalty for early withdrawal. Now, the insurance agent, this unscrupulous insurance agent, he got all of his money. But the clients that I was representative purchased an annuity that tied their money up that they couldn't get until they were over 100 years old, and it represented about a third to a fourth of their liquid assets. They were absolutely taken advantage of. I honestly do not see where Senator Eaton's bill is going to protect the situation of senior citizens, but if you go back to the original bill, on page 13, beginning at line 13, I'm sorry, page 3, line 13, it talks about suitability information. The current statute contains no criteria, no guidance whatsoever as to what is suitable. It just says suitable.
Senator Reinert's bill and Senator Gazelka's bills has specific criteria in it that would be very beneficial to the individual who is being asked to purchase this annuity, and really would, in my estimation, wave off an unscrupulous insurance agent, because it indicates what they cannot or what they must take into consideration in order to sell this. I really believe, I sincerely believe, that Senator Eaton's amendment is misplaced, misguided. The ability to sue after this annuity has been sold still remains, but the criteria as to what is suitable and is not is clearly contained in the bill as written, and consequently I would urge members to not support Senator Eaton's amendment. Thank you, Madam President.
Further discussion, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, I wanted to clarify that, well, first thank the Senator for making my case for me, because it's exactly what I said, is that we need the accountability at the beginning, not at the end. The seniors are unlikely to sue at their advanced age, and they need access to their money now, just as you said. That's why we need the oversight. When the bill is, or when the annuity, which, by the way, this covers both fixed and variable, and when it is inappropriate and it is flagged, then it's caught by the insurance company, who holds a responsibility for making sure that it's not issued. These senior citizens put $100,000 in these, and the broker gets $10,000. I mean, it's a pretty strong incentive to get these signed. So not everybody has that kind of moral fortitude, and I think we need this language to protect the senior citizens.
We're on the A1 Eaton Amendment. Senator Kazoka.
Mr. President, roll call.
Well, be a roll call. Any further discussion on the amendment? Further discussion, the Secretary will take a vote on the A1 amendment. All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There will be 13 ayes and 50 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do have a motion to make sure that we're working off the House language. So I would move that the amendment made to House File 791 in the Committee on Rules and Administration, adopted April 25th, 2013, pursuant to Rule 45, be stricken.
On that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Well, is there some difference? That's the House language. Maybe we better make explanation.
Yeah, to that motion, Mr. President, the only change that the House made was they added some language that actually came out of a concern raised in, Mr. President, your committee, the Senate Commerce Committee, on the role of who's responsible for direct response marketing. Adding the language that the House put in, adopting it over in the Senate side, makes it clear that companies are also responsible for any direct response marketing they do.
Any discussion on the motions? See, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would urge members to vote against this bill with the changes in it, with the FINRA exemption. This bill opens up a loophole that...
Mr. President, I'm sorry, a point of order, but we're on the motion to adopt the House language, not yet the full...
That is correct. We'll wait till the...
Mr. President, I don't believe this is in order. That I would just question that this is allowable to put the House amendment on at this point, or strike an amendment.
It's fine. We do this... Is in order. Yes, it's in order. So we're on the Reinhardt Amendment motion, I should say. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Further discussion on Senate File 574. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would, as I was saying, discourage members from voting for this bill. The loophole has not been closed or limited in this bill. We have the strongest law in the country in the current law, which resulted in the return of hundreds of millions of dollars to Minnesota seniors. FINRA exemption would weaken the law. Washington and New York do not include FINRA exemption in their versions of the NAIC model, and at least 21 others have not passed a version of the NAIC model. And the Attorney General assures me that there is no such requirement under the Dodd Amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Reinhardt.
Thank you, Mr. President. And just to conclude, I don't have talking points from anyone. In fact, the Attorney General has never actually spoken to me on this topic, which I would have valued. I can tell you, members, we had a really good conversation with the governor 2 weeks ago. I'm not going to tell you what he is or isn't going to do, but we talked specifically about the current form of the bill, including his veto letter from last year. I felt we had a really good conversation. I'll just sum up by saying I have a hard time believing that a bill that's now 6 pages in length that includes specific suitability information, specific training information, specific liability information is not preferable to this two paragraphs. So I would encourage a green vote. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 574. Seeing none, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File Number 791, a bill for an act relating to insurance, regulating annuity products, enacting and modifying a model regulation.
Secretary will take the roll. Final passage. All senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 55 ayes and 8 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
The next bill under consideration is number 75. It's House File 195. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 195 allows licensed dietitians and nutritionists to enter into a protocol with a licensed practitioner, typically a physician, for the administration of legend drugs with specific patients. Nurses, pharmacists, medical students, and physician assistants already have this authority. This authority would work well with the medical home model and will create the right care team for the individuals who require this type of care. I have about a dozen letters of support from pharmacists and doctors at Allina and the University of Minnesota, and I've been assured that they were just inadvertently left off the original bill. They are, if they're added to the list, they can adhere to the guidelines or protocol, and this authority would result in the administration of a drug, but the drug protocol is already agreed on by a physician. So I move adoption of this. It was, it's been non-controversial.
Any discussion on House File 195? Seeing none, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File Number 195.
I'm sorry. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. I apologize. I got up late. I was just looking at the bill, and I wonder if Senator Eaton would answer a question for me.
Will you yield, Senator Eaton? Yes, she will yield.
Senator Eaton, in looking at Section 1 of your bill, it talks about legend drugs being involved, and legend drugs, according to the definition I'm looking at, can include controlled substances such as narcotics. And so it seems to me this is a pretty important issue from the standpoint of issuing prescriptions. And it says that the licensed nutritionist and the dietitian, and candidly, I have no idea what kind of training a dietitian or a nutritionist may or may not have, but it says they implement a protocol. I don't see anything in the bill that indicates that the protocol that is being referenced in the bill has to be implemented by the licensed practitioner rather than the licensed nutritionist or dietitian. Can you point out to me where in the bill the mandate is that the protocol that we're dealing with has to be prescribed or created by a licensed practitioner? Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Hall. The language, if you look at Section 2, Subdivision 2, explains that a licensed practitioner would prescribe, administer, and dispense a legend drug and may cause the same to be administered by a nurse, physician assistant, or medical student or resident under their direction and supervision. So this dietitian would fall under that language.
Is there any further discussion on House File 195? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File or House File 195 its third reading.
House File Number 195, a bill for an act relating to health. allowing a licensed dietitian or licensed nutritionist to adhere to a practice guideline or protocol for a legend drug prescribed by a physician.
The Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted that desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 61 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and the title agreed to. The next bill under consideration is number 48 on the General Orders calendar and House File 1120, Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 1120 is a bill brought forward by the Office of Administrative Hearings. This bill modifies the Administrative Procedures Act to make clear that the Office of Administrative Hearings is not a party respondent to an appeal of an administrative law judge's final decision. This bill came forward because there are basically two types of administrative law cases. In 90% of the cases, or approximately 90% of the cases that are presented to the Office of Administrative Hearings, Administrative Law Division, the assigned administrative law judge makes a decision or a recommendation to an agency head as to the appropriate disposition of the case. Following review of the case, the agency head will then render the final decision of the agency in the matter. In approximately 10% of the cases, the remaining cases, the administrative law judge will enter a final decision on behalf of an agency, and this happens in cases where there's a specific statutory direction to do so or because of the agency's choice on the matter. The statute that governs appeals of final agency decisions does not make any differentiation between these two types of cases, and it instructs those filing an appeal to join the Office of Administrative Hearings as a respondent in these cases as the agency that rendered the final decision. What this bill does is remove the need for the Office of Administrative Hearings to be listed as a respondent and only include the parties that are really have a need to be parties to the litigation. Each time the Office of Administrative Hearings is joined in an appeal, it requires them to respond. There are papers served on the OIH, and the Attorney General's office has to get involved, and that includes then time and expense on their part. And the fact is that the OIH is not a policymaking organization, and they do not have a stake in the outcome of the appeal. So in that respect, this is a way to create efficiencies for the organization and to clarify who is actually a notable respondent in these cases, since the OIH is not a policymaking organization. Removing the OIH as a respondent does not have any impact on any other party, and as I stated, it will likely result in clarification to all parties involved that they do not have a stake in the case. Again, it will reduce costs and help them avoid unnecessary expenditures. And I urge you to vote green on this bill. Thank you.
Any discussion on House File 1120? Seeing none, the Secretary will give the House File 1120 its third reading.
House File Number 1120, a bill for an act relating to state government, requiring service on all parties for judicial review of contested case.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted that desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The last bill under consideration is number 134 on general orders on the calendar, Senate File 1006, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President, members. Senate File 1006 is a non-controversial bill that was requested by the charitable gambling folks. It's mostly technical and updating provisions. In Section 1, it does say that the threshold for required annual financial audit would move from $500,000 in gross receipts to $750,000. This will save about 128 Minnesota charities from paying for audits, which can cost about $5,000 annually, but they still will be audited by the Gambling Control Board, which has also approved this legislation. On
The bill provides for two additional days, from 2 to 4 days, for gambling receipts from electronic pull tab and bingo games to be recorded and deposited into gambling bank accounts. But electronic pull tab games will be moving to a system of monthly reporting, and so in Section 6, the Commissioner of Revenue asked us to add language that would allow revenue to close active
Senator
electronic
Pappas.
Pull tabs.
Members, could you please quiet down just a little bit? I'm having trouble hearing up here. Go ahead, Senator Pappas.
To close active electronic pull tabs once on May 31st, 2013, and move the games to this uniform system of reporting. An applicant for a linked bingo game provider license must attach to its application evidence of a bond not less than $100,000 as opposed to the current $100,000. That's in Section 2. And in Section 3, it also increases the number of off-site gambling permits for a charity from 4 to 12 events per calendar year. And an organization is required to check the ID of a pull tab winner if the prize is $100 or more instead of the current $50, and eliminates the requirement to retain winning pull tabs valued at less than $100. We did pass the bill with no opposition in committee. And I do have one technical amendment, because language that was supposed to have been deleted accidentally was not, and that's the A50 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A60 amendment. 50 amendment.
Senator Pappas moves to amend Senate File Number 1006 as follows, page 3, line 11, and this is the A50 amendment.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam President, on page 3, line 11, we're deleting that line and part of line 12 because it's duplicative. It's already, that language is in as a line below. So I would just ask for your support on that amendment.
Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. All opposed, no. Motion passes and the amendment is adopted.
Madam President, Senate Council just found another technical correction, and that's the A51 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A51 amendment.
Senator Pappas moves to amend Senate File Number 1006 as follows, page 4, line 14, and this is the A51 amendment.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President and members. On line 414, we mentioned the commissioner may require a one-time closing. That was the Commissioner of Revenue, and because this is an uncodified section, we needed to add a Commissioner of Revenue. That's what the amendment does.
Any discussion on the A51 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President. I'll stand for questions, or I would appreciate your support.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1006? Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1006 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1006, a bill for an act relating to lawful gambling, modifying account record keeping and other regulatory provisions.
The Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted that desire to vote. Oh. Senators, please vote. The secretary will close the roll. With 60 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
We revert now to messages from the House.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House files number 80 and 742, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. And Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage. Oh, sorry. Okay.
What are we doing here?
Now you go to the fourth order.
Hold on. Do you have another message?
I just read the titles later.
Ready? Fourth order of business, first reading of House bills. House file, the secretary will read the House. First message.
House file number 80, a bill for an act relating to judgments, regulating assigned consumer debt default judgments.
House file 80 is referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration for comparison with Senate file 33, now in general orders.
And House file number 740, a bill for an act relating to state lands, modifying landowners' bill of rights, modifying land acquisition account.
House file 740 will be referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration for comparison with Senate file 886, now on general orders. We move now to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Are there any announcements? Senator Horace Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if this is the time to, this is not an announcement for an issue of interest of the Senate, but I do have...
Point of personal privilege?
Yes, Madam Chair.
State your point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I just want to make sure that I leave on record that I intended to support Senate file 357 yesterday, and I voted incorrectly. This is a bill prohibiting the use of formaldehyde on children's products, and I was attending somebody who came to talk to me, and I thought I was voting on an amendment, and I intended to vote green on that bill.
Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senators Rood, Bonaf, Housley, all day. Senator Peterson B. at 4:20 until the end of session. Senator Pappas from 5:15 to 5:30. Senator Bach from 5:15 to 5:35. Senator Metzen at 5:30 until the end of session. Senator Siebman from 5:30 to 5:40. Are there any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the Senate do now adjourn until Wednesday, May 8th, 11 a.m.
All those in favor, say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.